reason. Without warning, Titan fastens the gun belt around my waist, his eyes and fingers quick on the buckles. The gun slides into its holster, feeling heavy and unfamiliar at my side. "If you lose your ability," he adds, "it's best to have a backup." Behind us, the temperature rises, a rippling heat that can only mean one thing. I look up just in time to watch Tiberius shoulder by, keeping his distance, furiously intent on staring at the floor as he goes, trying to ignore me. He might as well wear a sign around his neck. "Careful with those hands, Titan." He growls over his shoulder. "She bites." Titan just chuckles darkly. He doesn't need to respond, and doesn't attempt to. It only incenses Tiberius further. For once, I don't care about the scarlet flush heating my cheeks. I step away from Titan, who was still laughing. Tiberius watches me as I catch up to him, his bronze eyes alight with something more than his usual fire. Electric energy pulses through my limbs. I keep it in check, using it to fuel my resolve. "Don't be such a possessive ass," I snap, driving my elbow into his ribs as I stalk by. It's like hitting a wall. "If you insist on calling yourself a king, you can at least act like one." Behind me, he lets loose something between a snarl and a frustrated sigh. I don't respond, don't look back, and don't stop until I followed the steady current of soldiers outside onto the central plaza, where we first arrived hours ago. Black and forest green transports crowd the stone, the vehicles fanned out evenly. Davidson waits by the lead, Carmadon at his side. They embrace quickly, touching foreheads and kissing, before Carmadon backs away. Neither of them seems bothered by the impending skirmish. This must be a common occurrence, or they're very good at masking their fear. It could be both. The palace overlooks the growing number of soldiers, and shadows move on the balconies, servants and guests alike. I squint, trying to find my family among the silhouettes. Gisa's hair should stand out, but I spot Dad first. He hunches over a railing, leaning out to watch. When he sees me, he tips his head, but only a little. I want to wave, but it feels silly. And when the transports rev to life, their engines a growl across the pines, I know that calling to them is no use either. I find Farley at the lead transport, waiting alongside Davidson. She clambers inside, hoisting herself up and into the raised vehicle. These transports are different from the ones I'm used to. The wheels are much bigger, almost my height, with deep treads for the rocky, jagged mountain terrain. The rest of the body is reinforced, piped with steel, and decorated with many handholds, toeholds, and dangling straps, for obvious purpose. Titan jumps up, scrambling onto the back of the lead. He links himself to the frame alongside another Montfort soldier. The straps connect to their waists, giving them enough slack to lean, but not enough to bounce. Other soldiers, with all kinds of blood, do the same across the transports. Without their insignia, I can't tell for certain, but I assume they are the best shots, with both bullets and ability. Premier Davidson holds the door, waiting for me to join him inside the transport. Something hungry and wild drives me to do the opposite. I climb up next to Titan, tying myself in on his right. One corner of his mouth lifts, the only acknowledgement of my choice. The transport behind us is for Tiberius and Evangeline, their guards flanking the vehicle in unmistakable colors. I watch as Evangeline halts, one foot on the step up. She looks, not at me, but back at the palace. At Carmadon, waiting by the grand entrance, arms crossed, his white suit glowing in the floodlights. Annabelle stands nearby, a few feet distant, on the edge of impolite. She raises her chin when Tiberius appears, striding across the plaza with long steps. Without his colors, he seems like all the rest. A soldier, with orders to answer to. Fitting. That's who he thinks he is. Just another person under his father's command, obeying the will of someone dead. Again, we lock eyes, and something in both of us burns. Despite everything, his presence feels like safety. No matter what, he chases away any fear I have for myself. Of course, that only leaves fear for the people I love. For Farley, for my family, and still, always, for him. A settlement down on the plain is at risk, calling for aid on the other side of the mountain. There isn't time to go down the slope and wind around through the valley, so we go over it. There are roads above the palace, weaving high into the pines. We scream over the steep landscape, beneath branches so tight they obscure the stars. I lean flat to the transport, afraid of being dashed into an overhanging bough. Soon the trees are gone entirely, and the earth beneath our transports turns rocky. My head tightens, my ears popping like they do during jet takeoffs. Snow pocks the sloping ground, gathered in hollows at first, until it blankets the final peak. My exposed face goes red with cold, but the suits are special made, keeping me warm. Still, my teeth chatter, and I wonder exactly what possessed me to ride on the back of the transport rather than inside it. The tip of the mountain looms above, a white knife against a sky pinpricked with blazing stars. I lean back as far as I dare. The sight makes me feel small. My balance shifts, marking the descent. Snow sprays in our wake, then rocks and dirt, kicking up a cloud of debris to follow the transports down the eastern slope. My stomach plummets as we approach the tree line again. The plain stretches out beyond the pines, endless and dark as an ocean. I feel as if I could see across 1,000 miles, back to the Lakelands, to Norta, to Maven and whatever he has in store for us. Another hammer will fall, and soon. But where? On who? None of us can say yet. We plunge into the trees, the transport bouncing over roots and boulders. There are no roads on this side, only barely cleared paths through the arched branches. My teeth rattle with every bump, and the restraints are certainly bruising my hips. "Call to it," Titan growls, nudging up against me so I can hear him over the roar of engines and howl of wind. "Be ready." I nod, steeling myself. The thrum of electricity is easy to pull. I make sure not to draw from the engines around me, but on the lightning only I can summon. Purple and dangerous, it thunders under my skin. The massive pines thin, and I glimpse starlight between their needles. Not above, but beyond. Out. Forward. I shriek, pressing myself against the transport as it skids, turning a hard left onto a sudden, smooth road along the cliffside. For a terrifying moment, I think we might spin right off the mountain and plummet into the darkness below. But the vehicle holds firm, tires catching the road as one by one the other transports follow, hard drifting over the paved way. "Easy," Titan says, eyes flickering over my body. Purple sparks are running up and down my skin, responding to my fear. They burn off harmlessly, flickering in the dark. "There wasn't a better way to do that," I mutter. He barely shrugs. Hewn stone arches over the road at intervals, the structure's smooth cut, in alternating curves of marble and limestone. Each one is crowned with a pair of carved wings, the feathers etched deep into the rock to surround blazing lights, illuminating the path. "The Hawkway," I breathe aloud, a worthy name for the road as high as hawks and eagles fly. In the daylight, it must be astounding. The road zigzags back and forth down the almost cliff-like mountainside, precarious with sharp switchbacks. This must be the quickest way down to the plain, and also the most insane. But the transport drivers are infinitely skilled, hitting each razor-edged corner with precision. Perhaps they are all silks, or a new blood equivalent, their agility translating to the machines they drive. I try to stay vigilant as we tear down the Hawkway, on the lookout for hostile silvers hiding in the rocks and gnarled trees. Lights on the plains come into focus. The few towns Davidson mentioned dot the landscape. They seem peaceful, untouched. and vulnerable. We're rounding another switchback turn when something like a scream pierces the night. The sound of tearing metal, shredding at the seams, shrieks around us. I look up to see a transport falling, tipping over and over, knocked out of its place halfway back the line. All seems to slow down as it comes into blinding focus, my senses narrowing to the transport, spiraling in midair. The Montfort soldiers on board fight with their restraints, hoping to beat gravity. Another, a strong arm, grabs for the road edge. It slips through his fingers, the pavement cracking beneath his touch. The transport continues to fall, spinning on its axis. It can't be an accident. The trajectory is too perfect. It's going to flatten us. I barely have time to duck while my own transport lurches beneath me, our brakes squealing, trying to stop in time. Smoke burns from the tires as the brakes lock up. The road jumps when the transport smashes down, and we smash into it. Titan grabs the back of my suit, yanking me upward, while I snap my arms over my restraints, using my electricity to cut through the thick weave. We scramble forward as Tiberius and Evangeline's transport smashes into our rear, pinning us between the fallen vehicle and theirs. More screaming brakes and resounding crashes echo behind us, one after the other, a chain reaction of twisted engines and burned rubber. Only the last transports in the line, six or so, are saved from the onslaught. They're able to brake in time to save their machinery. I look back and forth, ahead and behind, not sure where to go. The fallen transport lies on its back, an overturned turtle. Davidson is already out of the lead, stumbling toward the soldiers crushed beneath the vehicle. Farley moves with him, gun ready in her hand. She drops to a knee, training her sights on the cliffs above us.
"Magnetrons!" Davidson roars, one hand raised for aid.
He pushes out a palm, forming a clear blue shield along the deadly edge of the road. Somehow, Evangeline is already at his side, her hands dancing. She hisses as she raises the heavy transport off the road, revealing twisted limbs and a few flattened skulls, seeping brain like popped grapes leaking juice. Davidson doesn't waste time, lurching forward to pull survivors from beneath the floating transport. Moving slowly, Evangeline lowers the transport again. With a twitch of her fingers, she rips off one of the doors, allowing those inside to tumble out. The soldiers are bloody and disoriented, but living.
"Get out of the way," she snaps, waving them back from the transport.
When they do, limping out of her path, she slaps her palms together in a resounding clap. The transport does as she wills, crushing itself into a dense, jagged ball the size of one of its doors. She lets it drop with a crack. Only the glass and the tires fly in every direction, beyond Evangeline's metallic control. One tire rolls down the road. An odd sight. I realize I'm standing up on my pinned transport. Evangeline turns around, her armor reflecting the starlight. Despite Titan next to me, I feel exposed, an easy target.
"Get the healers up here," I shout.
Looking back along the line of crushed vehicles piled up beneath the arches,
"And get some more light on the road."
Above us, something flares, a rising beam like the sun. The work of shadows, no doubt, manipulators of light. It sends harsh light and harsher darkness dancing across us all. I squint and clench a fist, sparking some electricity of my own around my knuckles. Like Farley, I keep my eyes on the rocky ledges rising all around. If the raiders somehow have the high ground, if they're above us, then we lose a great advantage. Tiberius already knows that.
"Eyes up! Sights on the cliffs!"
he shouts, his back to his transport. He too has a pistol in one hand, while flames twist around the fingers of the other. Not that the soldiers need such instruction. Anyone with a gun has it raised, fingers ready on the trigger. We just need a target. But the Hawkway is oddly silent, quiet except for the occasional shout and echo as orders pass along the line. A dozen or so Montfort soldiers work their way down the zagging road, silhouettes in their black suits. They stop at each transport, using their abilities to try to pull apart the mashed vehicles. Magnetrons and strong arms, or the new blood versions of each. Evangeline and her cousins stomp by below, focusing on extricating my transport from theirs.
"Can you fix it?" I call down.
She just sneers as she forces the twisted metal to slither apart. I'm a magnetron, not a mechanic, she grunts, shouldering between the wrecks. Suddenly I wish for Cameron and her tool belt, but she is far away, out of danger with her brother back in Piedmont. I bite my lip, brain buzzing. This is a blatant trap, an easy one, leaving us vulnerable on the mountainside, or just stuck here, while the raiders wreak havoc on the towns below, if not the city behind us. Tiberius is thinking the same thing. He hastens to the edge of the road, looking down into the darkness. Can you radio your settlements? They need to be warned. Ahead of you, Davidson barks back. He crouches over one of the wounded soldiers, holding his arm while a healer works at the man's broken leg. At the Premier's side, an officer speaks rapidly into her communications gear. Tiberius frowns, turning from the cliff back to the carnage. And send word back to the city. Call out a second detachment. Drop jets, if they can get here in time. Davidson barely nods. I get the feeling he's already done that too, but he holds his tongue, keeping his focus on the soldier beneath him. Healers, half a dozen or so, work diligently down the line, tending to anyone injured in the massive wreck. What about us? We can't stay up here for long. I slide off my vehicle, landing gently. It feels better to be on solid ground. Something tipped that transport. Still on the roof, Titan braces his hands on his hips. He looks at the zagging road above, investigating the otherwise empty spot the first transport fell from. Could be a small charge mine. Detonated at the right moment, it could flip a vehicle. Too clean, Tiberius growls. He paces along the road, his entire body on edge. His Lareland guards follow him a little too closely, almost catching his heels.
Coordinated. Someone's up here with us. We need to get down before they strike again. We're sitting ducks.
Sitting ducks on the edge of a cliff, Evangeline adds. She kicks at her own transport in frustration, putting a solid dent in the already crumpled front. We can get the working transports up front. Load them as much as we can.
Tiberius shakes his head.
It's not enough.
It's something, I snap at him.
We're only a few thousand feet up now. Some of the regiment can start running, get to the ground, Davidson says, helping one of the soldiers limp away from the head of the line. His communication officer follows, still jabbering into her radio.
The outpost at Golden Grove has transports. It isn't far from the foot of the mountain. On the ground, Farley whirls, lowering her gun in her haste.
You want us to split up?
Not for long, Davidson replies. She pales, rising to her feet.
But long enough, if, he asks. If this is a trap, a feint. You got word from the towns that raiders were close. But where is the attack?
She gestures to the black horizon.
There isn't one.
Not out there.
Davidson frowns, eyes shifting.
Not yet.
Or they didn't plan to attack at all. They wanted to draw us out of the city, Farley says. Catch us on the cliffs. You said yourself they fight for their pride, and the city is too well defended.
This is a hell of a way to get valuable targets out in the open.
The Premier steps to her, his face grim and stern. Then he puts a hand on her shoulder, squeezing a little, a friendly if apologetic gesture.
I won't leave my people out there alone. Because we might be in danger. I can't do that, General Farley. I know you understand my position.
He sighs. I expect more of a fight from Farley, but she drops her chin, almost nodding. She chews her lip and says nothing more. Satisfied, Davidson looks over his shoulder.
Captain Highcloud, Captain Villa,
he calls. Two officers in their black suits step forward, ready for their orders.
Take your units down. Hard march. All speed. Rendezvous at Golden Grove.
They salute in response, turning to gather their soldiers. As the two units group near the head of the line, Tiberius winces. He hastens to the Premier, clasping his arm, not to threaten him, but to beg. I know what fear looks like on Tiberius Calor, and I see it in him now.
Leave the gravitrons at least, he pleads, in case they decide to blow us all off the mountain.
After a brief moment of reflection, Davidson clicks his teeth.
Fine, he says.
And Your Highness, if you wouldn't mind, he adds, turning to face Evangeline. Those transports aren't going to climb over this mess without help. Use the gravitrons, too. They'll make quick work for you.
She eyes him with steel annoyance, unaccustomed to taking orders from anyone but her father. Still, she sighs and trots off to do as he wills.
What about me? I ask, planting myself between Tiberius and Davidson. Both of them jolt, forgetting I was even here to begin with.
Stay vigilant, is all Davidson offers, shrugging. Unless you can lift a transport off the ground, there's not much any of us can do right now.
Helpful, I growl in my head, but the frustration is with myself. My ability is meant to destroy. It has no purpose right now. I'm useless for the moment. So is Tiberius.
He watches Davidson stalk off, his communications officer in tow, leaving us standing alone, our backs to the wrecked hulk of my transport. Adrenaline and electricity still course through me. I have to lean against the metal, my fingers knotted together to keep from twitching.
I don't like this, Tiberius mutters.
I scoff, scuffing my new boots on the road. Stuck on a cliff, half of the soldiers gone, transports ruined, raider attack imminent, and I didn't get to finish my dinner. What's not to like? In spite of our circumstances, he grins, his smile crooked and familiar. I cross my arms, hoping he can't see me flush in the dim light. He stares at me, his eyes in intent, burning bronze, as they trace my face. Slowly, his lips fall and the smile fades as he remembers our decisions, our choices. But his stare remains, and I feel fire rise inside me, rage and want and regret in equal measure.
Don't look at me like that, Tiberius. Don't call me Tiberius, he shoots back, dropping his gaze.
I laugh bitterly. It's the name you chose. To that, he has no response, and we lapse into uneasy silence. The occasional shout or metallic groan echoes across the mountainside, the only sound in the empty darkness. On the zagging road above us, Evangeline, her cousins, and the gravitrons slowly leapfrog the all-terrain vehicles, moving the wrecks behind the transports that can still function. Davidson must have told her to preserve all the wrecks she could, or else she could just crush them all to dust and let the rest roll through.
I'm sorry about before, in the armory, he says after a long moment.
He keeps his eyes on the ground, head bowed in shadow, but not enough to hide the cold flush across his cheeks.
I shouldn't have said that.
I don't care what you said, I care about the intention behind it, I tell him, shaking my head. I don't belong to you.
I think anyone with eyes can see that.
Can you? I ask sharply. He exhales slowly, as if gathering himself for a fight. Instead, he turns his head to look down at me. The glowing lights of the Hawkway cast jagged shadows across his face, emphasizing his cheekbones. It makes him look old and tired. A king for years instead of days.
Yes, Mayor,
he finally says, his voice a low rumble.
But remember, it wasn't just me.
I blink. What?
You chose something over me, too, he sighs. Many things.
The Scarlet Guard, the Red Dawn, the hope of a better future for the people I love. I bite my lip, chewing my own flesh. I have nothing to deny. Tiberius isn't wrong.
If you two are done,
Titan says loudly, leaning down from his vantage point on the transport, I think you'd both be interested to know there are people in the trees. I suck in a breath, tensing up. Tiberius puts out a hand quickly, touching my arm in light warning.
Don't startle, he says. I'm guessing they have us targeted.
Metal groans, and I jump beneath Tiberius's fingers. His grip tightens, but it's just the transports being moved. How many? I ask through gritted teeth, trying my best to mask my fear. Titan looks down at me, eyes bright,
His white hair gleams in the artificial light illuminating the hawkway. Four, two on each side, at a good distance, but I can just feel their brains. Next to me, Tiberius frowns, the corners of his lips curving downward in distaste. 50 yards, maybe? I look past Tiberius, and he looks past me, both of us searching the shadowed pines as furtively as we can. I can't see anything beyond our circle of light, not the gleam of eyes or the flash of steel down a gun barrel. Nothing. I can't feel them either. My ability is nowhere near as strong or as focused as Titan's. Farley catches my eye and approaches with a hand on her hip, the other still clutching her pistol. You three look like you've seen a ghost, she says, sweeping her gaze back and forth. Snipers in the trees, she offers, as if she's asking about the weather. Did you see them? Titan breathes. No, she shakes her head, but it's what I'd do. You can drop them, right? I ask, nudging Titan's boot. I remember the Electrocons taught me about his ability, brain lightning. Titan can affect the electricity in a person's body, the tiny sparks inside our brains. He can kill without anyone knowing, without any trace. He frowns and furrows his dark brows, a sharp contrast to his dyed hair. I might be able to, from this distance, but only one at a time, he says, and only if they are raiders. Tiberius scowls. Who else would they be up here? I don't enjoy killing people without cause, Kalor, Titan replies, and I've lived on these mountains my entire life. So you'll wait for them to shoot us? The prince shifts slightly, squaring his shoulders so that I'm sheltered on one side. Titan doesn't budge. As he speaks, a breeze plays up, carrying with it the strong, sharply sweet scent of pine. I'll wait for your magnetron princess to tell me if they're holding sniper rifles or not. On the one hand, I agree with Tiberius. We're exposed up here, and who else would be waiting in the trees watching us scramble? But I understand Titan, too. I know what it is to pour lightning into a person, to sense their nerves sparking off and dying. It feels like a small death of your own, an ending you can never forget. Get Evangeline, I mutter. And tell Davidson. We need to be sure. Next to me, Tiberius huffs, but he doesn't argue. He pushes off the transport, intending to stalk after Evangeline. The breeze strengthens, playing across my face. Pine needles brush my skin, soft as trailing fingers. I try to catch one, but it dances off on the growing wind, and it sprouts before my eyes, a sapling growing in midair. It spears a soldier before any of us can react. The attack is not the storm of bullets we expected, but the spray of pine needles blasting in a strong, sudden gale. It catches Titan head-on, tossing him off the wrecked transport. He rolls onto the road, head smacking against the pavement. He stumbles to a knee, then falls, oddly off balance. I throw up an arm to protect my eyes and drop to a knee as needles scratch across my exposed skin. Where they land, roots and trunks burst forth in curling, living explosions. The hawkway cracks and transports heave, tossed by the forest growing before our eyes. My balance shifts with the road, and I fight to keep upright, bracing against the wrecked transport at my back. Tiberius reacts without thinking. He tosses a fireball, charring the pines sprouting up around us as fast as they can grow. The ash swirls in the growing wind, obscuring the road lights, making my eyes water. The air shudders with the sound of crushing metal and shattering glass. Evangeline and her crew are done wasting time. They flatten the wrecks that remain in the way, reducing them to solid puddles of iron and steel. The transports that still work roar, revving their engines as they lurch forward, fighting over pulsing roots and ripping branches. Evangeline leaps through the smoky air, climbing up onto a transport frame. Gunshots ring out, but the bullets fall to the wayside, tossed off by her ability. Blue shields spring to life on either end of the hawkway, tall and ethereal against the smoke and ash. Davidson controls each one with an outthrust fist. More shots sound, rippling over the shield. They can't penetrate. The guns can't reach us. Titan! I scream, looking for the Electrocon.
Titan, kill them!
He hoists himself to his feet, teetering as he wags his head back and forth, trying to shake away the daze. Using the nearest transport, he props himself up, leaning heavily.
Give me a second!
He yells back, shaking his head again. We still can't see the raiders, safe from their nests in the trees. There have to be green wardens, at least. Tiberius's flames spread across the surge of pines on the road, twisting like a snake, attempting to devour each new tree as it sprouts. His Lariland guards run between the trunks, laying hands on each. They explode at their touch, splintering in clouds of bark and blooming fire.
Get on the transports!
Davidson roars over the chaos. He still holds the shields, defending us from a hail of bullets.
We have to get off the mountain!
I suck in a deep breath, steeling myself. Focus. In the dark, I can't see the clouds gathering overhead, but I can feel them. Storm clouds, thunderheads, growing at my command, ready to strike. Someone pulls Titan onto the approaching transport, buckling him in. On the road, Tiberius directs his inferno through the lethal forest, trying to trap us on the cliff or push us off it. The rest of our detachment does their best to dodge the trees or destroy them, clearing the way for the transports and our escape. My heart thunders against my ribcage, adrenaline charging in my blood. It rises until I feel like I might burst. I take one more breath, deeper than before, and raise my hands, palms flat. My storm breaks overhead, twin bolts of lightning shattering down into the trees on either side of the hawkway. The pines crack, embers flare, trunks slide and lean before crashing into the underbrush. Fire springs up among the boughs, small at first, then gigantic, fueled by the strength of a Kalor prince. The bullets on our left stop long enough for Davidson to drop one shield and clamber onto the transport behind Evangeline's. The six vehicles bristle with soldiers, familiar and unfamiliar. In their black suits, they look like bugs, crowding for space on a stone in the middle of a churning river. Titan hangs off the side of Evangeline's transport, one arm looped through a set of straps. As they drive past Tiberius, still fighting, Titan extends a hand. The prince takes it without question, swinging up onto the transport with ease. I'm next. I land hard, tucked between Tiberius and Titan, with Evangeline upright above us. She fuses her metal boots to the body of the transport, which allows her to stand with confidence despite our growing speed. She clenches a fist, clearing the last wreck out of our way, slamming it against the cliffside. Glass sprays the air like jagged rain. Davidson's final shield drops, shifting from the trees ahead to the lead transport. But in that brief second, another storm of bullets peppers our convoy. A few hit dangerously close, pinging off the metal by my head. Adrenaline eats my fear. I focus on keeping my grip on the transport, fingers tight on makeshift handholds, my body pressed against the cold steel. Flame chases alongside us, flanking the cliff edge of the transport. Tiberius keeps hold of it, dragging the swirl of fire with us, charring anything in our path. We scream over the road, taking the switchbacks with blinding speed.
More in the trees,
Titan growls, his teeth gritted against the wind. He squints into the darkness, his eyes narrowing to slits. I know what he's doing, even if I can't do it myself. Titan reaches out to the brains, feeling them as I feel the storm. He blinks once, twice, killing anyone within his reach, leveling them with a fury of electricity in their skulls. I imagine raiders dropping to the forest floor, their bodies twitching through a deadly seizure before finally lying still. I rain lightning into the pines, more bolts striking through trunks and branches. The blinding flashes illuminate the forest for a moment, enough to see the silhouettes of falling trees and fleeing figures. A dozen, at least. The hawkway levels for the last mile as we leave the sharp corners and cliffs behind. The transports roar beneath us, eating up the straightaway in a mad race to the foot of the mountain. Fire and storm run with us, two guardians on deadly wings. More engines flare on the edge of my awareness, not as strong as the transports, but just as fast, and moving toward us with furious speed. The first cycle snarls out of the tree line, its single headlight blinding. The raider on it is small, with spindly limbs, armor, and goggles. He is also boldly stupid, driving the cycle up and off a boulder, sending himself arcing over the road. Above me, Evangeline slices her hands through the air. The cycle shreds at her command, spokes and pipes peeling apart. But she isn't the only magnetron here. The raider keeps his seat, and the cycle knits back together beneath his body, continuing its leap over the hood of the transport. As he goes, he tosses something. The steel glints in the dim light, fast as any bullet. Knives sail through the air, their razor edges cutting the wind. We duck together. Tiberius, Titan, and I. One grazes my shoulder. The suit saves me from the worst of it, but I still feel the sting. I bite my lip hard, forcing back a yelp of pain. The cycling raider hits the other side of the road hard, wheels skidding through dirt as he circles to make another pass. Instead, he crunches into a thin blue wall, the cycle crumpling beneath him as he falls backward, gushing blood. Davidson moves the shields with us, trying to block the other cycles spitting out of the trees. Some of the riders drop, their bodies spasming as Titan takes hold of them. The rest of our focus is on getting onto the plane, out into the open. To the outpost are reinforcements and safety. The Montfort Newbloods defend the convoy, pushing back the raider attacks with everything they have. Tiberius's fire spreads through the trees, the ash falling around us like snow, coating us in white and gray. I let my lightning crack across the sky, the sound and force of it enough to send the raiders scurrying back into the trees. In the darkness, it's hard to discern their shadows. They don't look like the Silvers I'm used to, in fine robes, polished armor, and gleaming jewels. They don't even have the neat severity of training suits and uniforms. These Silvers are different, their clothes a patchwork, their weapons and gear mismatched. I'm reminded, more than anything, of the Scarlet Guard, in their scraps of red, united only by a color and a cause. The cycles disappear into the smoky underbrush, their headlights bobbing and weaving out of sight. I reach for the engines, trying to grab hold before they pass beyond my grasp, but another rumble makes me pause, a pounding thrum lurching close. I can feel it in my teeth. Monsters burst from the ash, their shaggy heads massive, horns lowered, hooves stamping. Dozens of them, snorting and braying in hulking ranks. The stampede pummels into the convoy, knocking over each transport, even as they meet bullets and fire and lightning and knives. The monsters are too strong, too strange. Their hides thick, muscles thicker, with bone like living armor. I watch one catch a bullet in the forehead and keep on ramming, horns tearing through metal like paper. I barely have the wherewithal to scream. Our transport tips beneath us, knocked off the road by the monstrous charge. We topple with it. I hit the dirt hard and taste blood. Someone holds me down, their hand on my neck. Through my hair, I glimpse the transport as it sails over us. Evangeline is silhouetted against the sight, arms outstretched, fists clenched. She swings, using the transport like a battering ram, and tosses it into the stampeding herd of fearsome creatures. They circle and charge again, their eyes wide and furious, clearly under the control of a silver Animos. I scramble up, using Tiberius's arm to leverage my weight and get back on my feet. Some yards away, Farley fires her gun from a knee. Her bullets have no effect on the beasts as they run, closing the distance quickly. Gritting my teeth, I toss and spread, weaving purple-white lightning across their path. The beasts rear in terror, still animals despite whoever is controlling them. A few attempt to run through. They scream in pain, collapsing in heaps of twitching hide and tossing horns. I try to ignore the terrible sound and narrow my eyes, squinting through the semi-darkness as fear gives way to instinct. My movements come without thought, every step and sweep of my arms immediate. In my focus, I almost don't notice the creeping sensation, the heavy weight falling around my shoulders. The press is gentle at first, easy to mistake for exhaustion. But my lightning wanes, not as bright as before, not as easy to control. It flickers, sparking weakly as I brush aside another raider. He falls but gets back up quickly, a fist clenched in my direction. The force of his ability sends me to my knees, and I lose all sensation of electricity, like a candle snuffed out, unable to spark and burn. I can't breathe. I can't think. I can't fight. Silence. A voice in me screams. A familiar pain and familiar fear level me again, bending me over. My useless hands hit the dirt, brushing against cold earth. I gasp weakly, barely able to move,
let alone defend myself. Fear sends me spiraling, my vision going black for a second. I feel manacles again, silent stone around my wrists and ankles, keeping me prisoner behind a locked door, chaining me to a false king, dooming me to a life of slow, wasting death. The silver stalks toward me, his footsteps thunderous in my ears. I hear the sing of rasping metal as he draws a knife, intending to make quick work of my throat. It flashes in the night, reflecting the flames with a red sheen. He grins at me, his face bloodless and white, as he grabs my hair, forcing my head back. I want to fight him. I should reach for the gun at my hip, still holstered, but my limbs won't move. Even my heartbeat feels sluggish. I can't even scream. The combination of crushing silence and fear keeps me still. All I can do is watch. The blade edges my skin, almost burning me with its cold. He leers down at me, his hair greasy beneath the scarf wrapped around his forehead. I can't tell what color the fabric is, if it means anything. A useless thing to wonder right now. Then, his face explodes. Shards of bone and torn flesh arc forward. His body follows the momentum, slumping over me, and the thunderous touch of electricity returns as quickly as he falls. I scramble, unthinking, sliding out from under the silence's corpse, even as his warm blood and splintered teeth catch in my hair. Someone grabs me beneath the arm, dragging me through the dirt. I let them, still in shock, still paralyzed by fear, unable to do much more than kick weakly at the ground. In the distance, Farley watches me with a murderous expression, her pistol still raised and aimed at a man already dead.
"It's me,"
a deep voice says, laying me down some yards away, or rather, letting me drop. Tiberius stands back, eyes wide and almost glowing in the dim light. His breath comes in quick puffs as he looks me over.
"Stand up," I tell myself. "Get back on your feet." If only I could. If only the memory of Silent Stone were so easy to brush off. Slowly, I brush my hands together, calling sparks to my skin. I have to see them. I have to know they aren't gone again. Then I touch my throat, my fingers coming away slick with my own blood. Tiberius watches in silence, unblinking. I stare back until he turns away, putting reluctant distance between us. When I get my bearings, I realize I'm somewhat defended. He dumped me next to the transports, using the wrecks for cover. All around me, soldiers of Montfort reform along the line. Davidson stalks among them, a streak of blood across his face. He looks disgusted with himself and with the raiders. Shaky, I climb to my feet, using the hulking vehicle above me for support. The battle still rages before us, and the monstrous beasts snort and stamp, at odds with their own nature and their silver masters. A net of white lightning forms ahead of them, like a fence to hold them back. They toss their heads at the display, frightened beyond sense. I know the feeling.
"Poor things,"
I hear Titan mutter as he stops next to me. He stares at the beasts, strangely forlorn. When one tries to charge, he blinks and it drops, its massive body crumpling. The raiders return for another pass, their cycles snarling and leaping through the thinning trees. Evangeline and her cousins do battle with the other magnetrons, wrestling for dominance over the cycles. One hand on my chest, nails clutching at my suit, I try to grab hold of a cycle as it leaps over the road. Glaring, I trace the lines of electricity into its engine. With a great push of resolve, I feel them die in quick succession, a sudden burst, and then nothing. The rider twists, startled, as his machine fails. Breathing hard, I do the same to the next. They fall one by one, either coasting to a stop or toppling in midair. Our own soldiers descend on the raiders. They must have orders to capture, not kill. Davidson himself imprisons one in a cage of shields, letting the raider pound uselessly at his blue prison. Evangeline pursues one of the small raider magnetrons, running him down over the dirt. He tries to duel her, swirling twin blades that bleed between sword and whip. She is faster and more deadly. His swords are no match for her knives as they pepper his skin, her ability too strong for him to overcome. Evangeline Samos owes no allegiance to Davidson, and she doesn't have his mercy. She cuts the raider apart,
letting him bleed silver beneath the starlight. Between the blood and the ash, the low foothills smell and taste like death. I gulp down the wretched air anyway, trying to catch my breath. The remaining raiders know the battle is lost, and their engines begin to ebb away, attempting to escape into the wilderness. As they disappear, so does their influence, and the herd of beasts calms. They turn, charging away into the forest, leaving only corpses and trampled underbrush behind. "Was that what you call a bison?" I pant, glancing at Davidson. He nods grimly, and I swallow around the irony. I can still feel the bison steak in my stomach, heavy as a stone. In the distance, some ways down the road, headlights flare out of the plane. I clench a fist, tensing for a second wave. But Titan puts a hand on my arm. He looks down at me with flashing eyes.
"It's the Golden Grove transports. Reinforcements."
Relief floods me, and I drop my shoulders, exhaling. The movement sends a twinge through the cut on my back. I hiss, wincing, and put up a hand to feel the damage. The gash is long, but not so deep. A few yards away, Tiberius watches me take stock of my wounds. He jumps when I meet his gaze and spins on his heel.
"I'll get you a healer," he mutters, stalking off.
"If you're done crying over paper cuts, I could use some help." Still on the ground, Farley gestures with one hand, her teeth clenched together tightly. Her gun lies in the dirt, surrounded by spent bullet casings. One of them saved my life. She leans to one side, careful not to move her right leg, because her knee is wrong. My vision swims for a second. I've seen many forms of injury, but the way her knee twists, the lower half of her leg out of position, something about it turns my stomach. I immediately forget the ache in my own muscles, the blood on my shoulder, even the touch of silence, and rush to her side.
"Don't move," I hear myself say.
"No shit," she growls back, her hands tight on mine.
10. Iris. The mountains are steep and perilous, guarding the valley cities from siege or an army's onslaught. The thick pines make for dangerous obstacles to any transport that dares to turn off their defended roadways. And the elevation alone is a deterrent, weakening any who might hope to climb their way up into the city's jaws. They think themselves safe in their fortress of cliff and sky. They see no danger, for no army could hope to march to their door. But we are often made weak by what also makes us strong. Montfort is no exception. We land to the east, outside their borders, well within the bounds of prairie. Our drop jet is unmarked, freshly painted in prairie gold for appearance sake. It blends well with the tall grass as it sways like waves beneath the morning light. No one notices our arrival, out on the distant plains. We flew carefully, first through the wilds of the Lakelands, before crossing the open and empty landscape. The prairie lords are far-flung, their lands too vast and sprawling to patrol properly, and they are preoccupied with their own doings. They don't know we'd cross their lands. No one knows we're here. Except the raiders, of course. Their involvement is necessary, to lure as many as we can out of Ascendant. With any luck, Tiberius Calor will be one of them. According to Maven, his brother would never pass up an opportunity to fight. To show off, he added, scowling at the idea when we discussed this. I don't know the exiled prince. I've never met Tiberius Calor. But the Lakelands is not a blind country. We collected intelligence on him and all the royal family. They were our enemies for more than a century, after all. The reports revealed an altogether predictable prince, raised to be a military leader like his father. Hammered by duty and exception, formed into a person who values the crown above all else. The brothers have that in common, I think, along with a very peculiar red girl. I have to agree with Maven's assessment. If Tiberius really is here to bargain with Montfort, to strengthen their alliance, he will certainly try to prove himself and win their loyalty. What better way than to fight for them? The raiders meet us at the agreed-upon location, a rise allowing full view of the surrounding landscape. They're masked and veiled, sitting astride smoke-spitting old-fashioned cycles, with even their eyes obscured by riding goggles. Silvers, all of them. Exiled from their own lands when the Mountain Kingdoms fell, stripped of their own birthrights as lords and rulers. They outnumber us, but I feel little fear. I am a warrior by birth, bred by the strongest nymphs in my kingdom, and my 5 escorts are just the same, strong, noble, and useful. Judansa is still with me, eager to serve as well as protect. She's careful to position herself between me and any raider who might come too close. I keep my head down, my own face shadowed. The riders are an isolated kind, and they probably wouldn't know a princess of the Lakelands or the Queen of Norta on sight. But it's best this way. The others speak for me, going over the arrangement. Our team of 6 is easy to transport, each of us clinging to one of the raiders as they ferry us across the plain. They know this land better than any of us, and we don't even need to use our shadow of House Haven to hide our journey. Not yet. The mountains in the distance loom closer with every passing second. They look more like a wall than any mountains I've ever seen. Fear tries to eat at my resolve, but I don't let it. Instead, I narrow my eyes and sharpen my focus on the task at hand, leaving little room for anything else. As the hours bleed together, I run over the plan in my head, each obstacle to be surmounted. Cross the border. That is done easily. The raiders know their paths, and they know Montfort's blind spots. They follow a stream through tight, dense pine forest, and only when we start climbing into the foothills do I realize we're on the other side of the invisible dividing line between Prairie and Montfort. Pay for your passage. The string of jewels is mine, sapphire, silver, and diamond. I hand them over at gunpoint. Our Haven Shadow, a young, stocky sentinel on loan from my royal husband, gives up the more valuable piece of the bargain. His own house is split, torn in two by the civil war erupting across Norta. The head of his house fights for Tiberius, but the majority of his kin remain at Maven's side. An admirable thing, to be loyal to country and king over family, even if that king is Maven Kalor. He doesn't wear his sentinel mask, leaving the black jewel tradition behind. Without it, he seems human. Blue eyes, red hair gleaming in the sunlight. Sentinel Haven gives the raiders the location of our resource drop some miles north. Crates of food, coin, batteries, as well as arms and ammunition to feed their endeavors. The raiders waste no time leaving us on the eastern mountainside, as high as they could ride. I never see their faces, but at least one has blonde hair, a few strands of it visible beneath his wrapped head coverings. Climb. The waterfalls are simple enough. They act as moving ladders, and I use the water to pull us up and over a great many cliffs. I eventually lose count of them. We follow the stream backward, against the current, with little difficulty. Between my ability and that of another nymph, Leiron of the Norton House Osanos, all 6 of us manage to get into the high valley as the stars prick to life overhead. Still, the way is rough. The air thins and my breathing turns shallow, making my steps harder with every inch of the ascent. But I am no stranger to physical exertion. I trained at Citadel of the Lakes from childhood. The Haven Man keeps his hands free, fingers twitching now and then. He blankets us in invisibility, allowing us to move through the pines unseen. It's an odd thing to look down at your own feet and see nothing but the underbrush. At least I don't have to look at Rydal, the Rumbo's strong arm. On the way up, his bulk was distorted by the 2 bodies strapped across his shoulders like a pack. Another part of my own plan. A bloody part. Again, I push away a shiver of fear. We began our climb farther north of the city, forcing us to cut back south to reach the river. It is dammed downstream, in the valley where Ascendant lies, creating a crooked lake. I feel some weight lift when we reach the water, its banks quiet and empty. Together the 6 of us descend beneath its surface, leaving no trace of ourselves behind. I turn my attentions on the current, creating a channel of flowing water along the riverbed. Leiron does as we planned. Bubbles form around our heads, giving each of us a shield of breathable air. It's an old nymph trick, something a child could do. And so we pass in secret along the waterway, riding the current through the turns of the valley. It's almost pitch black, but I trust the water. The last miles pass in forced silence, filled only with the sound of my own breathing and my own pounding heartbeat. The Ascendant City Lake is deep and full of fish. Once or twice I jump at the brush of scales and darkness as we navigate to the edge of the water. I shrug off the sensation, focusing on the next step in my plan. Several fine estates have docks on the lake, and we use them as cover. I surface first, raising my eyes just above the waterline. After hours in the wilderness and underwater, even the soft lights of the city are glaring. I don't blink or flinch. I force my eyesight to adjust as quickly as I can. We have a schedule to keep. No alarms yet. No warning signals. Good. Sentinel Haven shrouds us again as we leave the water, but even he can't hide the wet footprints that trail us through the alleyways. That is left to Leiron and me. We wring ourselves dry with a few twists, using our abilities to squeeze every drop out. I condense the resulting puddles, casting away floating orbs of water into the nearest plant or gutter, leaving no trace. I spent the flight to Prairie memorizing the layout of Ascendant, using the map from Bracken. It unsettles me to know so much of my plan is built on someone else's work. I have to trust the information I was given, even if one wrong piece could mean failure. Though the Montfort capital is confusing, a jagged network of streets and steps along both sides of the valley floor, I was able to trace the quickest route from the dammed lake up to where Bracken's children are being held. Not in the palace, according to the Piedmont spies, but in an observatory. From the safety of a dark and silent alleyway, I glance up the stepped slopes to the domed building high on the mountainside. My legs shudder at the thought of climbing another few thousand feet, but I push forward without a sound, schooling my breath to a low, even pace, in through the nose, out through the mouth, in tandem with my steps. The strong arm has little trouble with the stairs, despite the extra weight of his cargo. And the Haven Sentinel is better trained than any of us. Raised to defend the king and his family, he is in prime physical form. The same can be said of Leiron. I'm loath to trust a Norton, let alone three at my side, but it couldn't be helped. An even representation was required for politics' sake. Jadansa is the only companion I trust completely. The other Lakelander with us sets my teeth on edge. I loathe Nero of the Iscariol line, but we need him and his talents. He's a skin healer, a strange one. A person gifted with the ability to save life should not enjoy taking it as much as he does. I can hear him breathing, inhaling and exhaling rapidly as we ascend. Though I'm glad to have a healer as talented as he is at our backs, I wish he weren't necessary. Nero takes too much delight in what he must do before the night is done.
"With luck, they won't be noticed until midday," he whispers. "My work will be perfect."
His voice is smooth, silken. Nero comes from a long line of diplomats, just as adept at healing political alliances as they are at fixing broken bones.
"Keep silent," I murmur back at him.
The ghost of his presence is somehow colder than the mountain air. Ascendant is not undefended. Guard posts and patrols dot the way, though far less than I've seen in the Lakelands or the Norton capital. These foolish Montfortans think their mountains and their secrets are enough to keep them safe. I glance over my shoulder at the other side of the valley. I feel the swish of my black braid, but can't see it. What must be the Premier's palace sprawls across the height opposite us, with other estates and government buildings lining its edges. It gleams white in the starlight, with many lights glowing from balconies, windows, and terraces. Mayor Barrow is in there, the lightning girl with a knack for survival. I thought her a delightful curiosity in Archaon. The red girl leashed to a silver king, who seemed just as trapped by her as she was by him. I won't pretend to understand why she bewitches Maven in such a way, but it must be his mother's doing. No person of sound mind carries such obsession. And it cannot be love. No person